Okay, sorry, I'm supposed to do my bit after that, aren't I?
Yes.
Good start. Okay. my name... Jesus, if you laugh every time, then it's not going to get done.
Do I just need to start over? Okay.
Hello, and welcome to Let's Learn Everything, the show where we share anything and everything interesting. Today, we'll be covering a science topic, answering a question, and then hopping into a miscellaneous topic. My name is Tom, and today I'll be covering the main topic, which will be time perception illusions.
Ooh. That sounds so good!
That's the spot you wanted, right?
Did you hear? Tom's talking about time perception illusions today.
Ooh. My name is Ella, and today's question is, why are bees electrically charged?
Oh my god! I'm so excited to know more about this. Oh my goodness.
I did not know that they were.
No.
So many questions. Lots of questions to that one.
I'm Caroline, and I'm doing the miscellaneous topic this week, which is my favorite conspiracy theory.
Oh, yes, I love conspiracy theories.
Yes, me too.
I can't wait till we get to the end, like we go through all the topics and it's Carolyn's turn and it's like, we've never been on the moon.
Oh no.
It's gonna be like, so serious. Yeah.
Oh no.
Oh no. It gets to it and it's like jet fuel can't melt steel beams. We're like, oh no, Caroline. This is not the kind of person I thought
Birds
you were.
Birds aren't real. Wake up, sheeple.
They're not. Penguins fake. Okay.
Oh boy. We did two test episodes. We were like, this is great. These people are great. And then this is why you always do three. You gotta weed out the, those conspiracy theories. Let's hop in. So this was my cognitive science undergrad thesis. I told myself I was going to make a totally human readable title. But then the moment I finished it and I had the document up, I typed up a 17-word, 126-character thesis title because you gotta. I don't know why. Partly as a victory lap, but honestly, it should be way shorter, and I'm part of the problem. And I'll tell you that at the end because it's kind of a spoiler for what we're going to be talking about. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about time perception, and in doing so, we're going to open up maybe the two biggest worms in science, which are time and perception. So I'm going to try to tread...
Two biggest worms?
Biggest, sorry. Biggest cans of worms in science.
There we go.
The two biggest worms.
The biggest worms in science, time and perception. So I'm going to try to tread carefully. And I think the reason why their time and perception are so contentious is because they're so ubiquitous, and because they're so ubiquitous, we make a lot of assumptions and we take a lot of things for granted, right? Like, we're always perceiving there's always time, and so we feel like we know it very well. There's a lot of, like, folk wisdom and personal feelings about time perception, right? That it seems to, like, drag. Sometimes it feels like it runs really fast. There's, like, time flies when you're having fun, and when you're bored, it feels like you're watching paint dry. And so I think the best way to learn about time perception and perception in general isn't to try to describe what it is, but to show where it fails with illusions. So a really common audio illusion that went viral a while back is Yanny and Laurel.
Oh my god,
right?
You're gonna say that? Yeah.
Yanny, Laurel. And I have it here, if you all remember.
Laurel.
Oh, I hear Yanny.
Do you really?
Laurel.
But I can, like, swap between the two.
Can you really swap? I can't. I fully have Laurel. I don't know if that's because of the, tinnitus.
Will you play it again? Maybe I can hear.
Maybe headphones, Yanny, like, if
Laurel.
I impact it.
Laurel.
No. Yanny starts off high.
Do y'all remember, there was another one. Do you remember Brainstorm and Green Needle? I thought this one was much more effective.
No, I never saw this.
So I'm going to play right now. So, okay, so you're going to hear the word brainstorm.
Green Needle.
And then now you're going to hear the phrase green needle. Do you hear that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're both, that was the same. That was the same audio.
It's the same audio. It hurts my brain.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. did you really think, did you think they were separate audios and you're like, what's the point? What are we doing?
I thought you were going to like merge them together or something.
No,
be like, what?
That's
like,
it. I don't know. And if you're listening to this, you can go back and hear it again to prove that they are exactly the same. That one in particular is really, and I think that one was a toy that just happened to have that audio. Like no one made that.
Yeah.
And so the point of this is that
it's just misheard lyrics then basically.
Well, so what's interesting is that it is sort of like that, but basically it just shows that our perception is different from reality, right? The fact that you and Carolyn can hear the same objective thing in two different ways shows what makes perception perception, right? It's what you interpret. And so this is a really obvious illusion, but sometimes perceptual illusions and temporal illusions especially are a lot more subtle. And I'm going to show you how subtle they are with a little magic trick. So, and you can do this at home, listeners, too. So if you hold your hands out in front of you, about a foot apart from each other, and then just look in the space between your hands, and then clap. Wasn't that amazing?
Okay. Wow, what a good magic trick. Oh my goodness.
What?
Wow, great.
Blown away.
So,
what were we supposed to see there?
Sorry, what just...
So if the trick worked, you saw your hands come together and make the sound at the same time, which is impossible because the speed of sound travels at roughly 300 meters per second. The speed of light travels at roughly 300 million meters per second. And on top of that, visual and audio stimuli are received completely differently, right? It's rods and cones in your eyes and hairs in your ears. And most importantly, the visual and auditory cortices in the brain are in completely different parts of the brain. They're different sizes and they're processed at different speeds. And in spite of all of that, the magic is that it seems to happen at the same time.
I'm just gonna have to pause.
This is some scientist bullshit.
I know your face. Like, oh my god.
Okay, but also,
it's magic that you can hear it and see it. Well,
Ella, if you look in your back left pocket, is that your card? So the theory here is that we have this range, this window of time, where as long as things happen roughly in there, we perceive them as being simultaneous. So you can kind of think of this as like a temporal resolution. And that window, that resolution is different for different things. So this is actually does feel like a magic trick. So there's a wild example of this. So in 1980, N.F. Dixon and L. Spitz did an experiment where they showed that if you have a video of a person talking, in order for you to realize that the audio is delayed, the delay of the audio after the visual needs to be greater than 250 milliseconds, which sounds fast. 250 milliseconds sounds really fast, but that's also just a quarter of a second. So do you want to hear what 250 milliseconds sounds like?
Yes.
So each drum beat here is 250 milliseconds apart. Which is
I believe you, but I feel like when I'm watching something and the audio is unsynced, I feel like I can notice like super super close. Do some people have a better or is the human
is
limit
Ella
250
special?
Milliseconds? Am I actually super human?
So I do think this is very interesting, and we'll get into some of this later. There could be social reasons. So this was done in 1980, right? There could be social reasons why, you know, as we live in a world where there is more video and audio, we're more used to that possibly. But one other thing I want to point out is that another thing that is 250 milliseconds is, of course... So every eighth note here is 250 milliseconds. And that wasn't an excuse just to include one of my favorite songs on the podcast.
Caroline's
that was
walked off.
For a sign. Oh, Caroline's left.
No.
No, that's fine.
Too much for me. No. I can never listen to the song again now. You know that, right? You ruined it for me. Forever.
You're just gonna be like, oh, every eighth note is 250 milliseconds. Did you know that? That's a great trivia fact. Bring up at the bar.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
at the club, you're like, hey, did you know this is... each eighth note is 250 milliseconds which is the amount of time you would need between seeing someone speaking and hearing it to notice a delay.
I'm gonna try and make friends with my flatmates just by giving them that fact. It'll work. I'll be the favorite person, you know?
So, when it comes to audio temporal resolution, we can hear that, right? You can hear those quarter notes, but... when it comes to something more complicated and social, like reading lips and understanding what someone is trying to say, it's a wider range. And this is also why things like Zoom don't feel terrible, right? If we didn't have such a big window of simultaneity, things like video calls would be insufferable. So honestly, this illusion, it's not bad. Pretty good. 10 out of 10. Evolution. You did good. Good illusion. But the weird thing is that this illusion goes farther. So I really love this experiment. I think it's so fun and also really intuitive. So it's a study in 2001 by Cunningham, Billick, and Sue. So they had folks play a little video game where they move their mouse left and right to fly a little ship and avoid obstacles. And so they do a test at the beginning, get a sense of how good they are. And then they split them into one of two groups. In one of the groups, they just continue to play the game as it is. And in the other, they add a delay to the mouse. And at first, people are horrible with it. They're like, this is unplayable. They're bumping into everything. They're rage quitting. They're teabagging. They're making fun of everyone's mothers in the voice chat. but then they get better at it. And the weird thing is they don't just get better at it. They get used to it. So this is a quote from the study. Additionally, towards the end of training, several subjects reported that the visual and haptic feedback seemed simultaneous, despite the fact that there was still a 235 millisecond offset. And again, for those wondering, 235 millisecond delay is roughly...
oh my god.
Just,
please
just
stop.
Just for reference. And the real reason you can tell that they've internalized this delay... is because when they turn the delay off, they're horrible at the game again.
Oh, interesting.
And so before, they make it through roughly 84% of the time, and then after getting used to the delay and then having it turned off, they only get through 32% of the time. For one person, they started off getting in 80% and then went all the way down to 0%. They could not complete the game once they got used to the delay and it got turned off. So... this is weird, but it also totally lines up with a lot of experiments that we've done on perceptual flexibility. There's a famous psych experiment by Stratton about inverted goggles, where he wore goggles that flipped the world upside down. Oh, again, bumping into everything, but then slowly got used to it again. And then once he took them off, it felt like the world had flipped upside down again. Another great example.
Wait,
on
didn't
YouTube,
his didn't yeah. his perception? It like it actually flipped the
yeah,
it back
exactly.
to the right way
yeah.
around. It wasn't just that he got used to it. It was like
yes,
he was seeing
yes.
things normally.
Exactly. And that's a great point. His perception adapted to it. He didn't just get used to it. What he was perceiving changed. And another
did you do this in a TikTok video?
I did
you
not.
You mentioned this in a TikTok video?
No.
I feel like I know that fact in your voice.
It's a great story. And there's another example from YouTube, which is Destin from Smarter Every Day and the backwards bicycle. Have y'all seen that?
No.
So he rigged up a bicycle to invert the direction. Basically, he added two gears to it so that when you turn left, it goes right. When you turn right, it goes left. And it takes him a while, forever to learn it because it's just so strange. But then he got used to it. And then when he went back on a regular bike, he was unable to, it's so funny because he looks like a child. He's just like, can't ride a bicycle. So what's interesting about this when it comes to the video game is that this isn't a change into how we perceive images, or how we perceive our body through proprioception with the bike. This is a change to how we perceive time, right? The order of events, which is wacky to think about. So one word for this is, Ella, are you frozen or are you just standing still? I apologize.
I'm just still.
You're totally fine. You're totally fine. I just wanted to check.
No, I was really totally interested in what you were saying, so I'm just like, oh. I'm like waiting to hear.
I just wanted to check. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. So-
you look so concerned. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll move.
No, you're totally fine. I just wanted to double check because we were doing the... oh, God, I'm so sorry. So, one word for this is lag adaptation. Kogsai hasn't really settled on a consensus for this phrase. I like the phrase lag adaptation. I think it's neat. And this makes sense because, you know, when we think about the window of what's simultaneous that we talked about before, it can't be a fixed number, right? It can't just be like point, you know, however many milliseconds, because your body changes and grows, you know, and so you have to be able to adapt as your brain changes, your brain increases in size, your body changes. And it also lines up with our common perception of time, right? How it's able to be sped up, slowed down. Time feels sort of like a camera that you're able to like crank faster or slower. So this is great, honestly. I think this illusion's good. Meddling with time hasn't caused anything weird. Nothing ever is going to go wrong. So Ella, what's the question for today?
Wait, is that the end?
Oh no. Oh no, absolutely not. There's one.
I was like, that's, you can't leave me there.
No. There's one final illusion that's really, really wonky, and it's my favorite. So we've been using the metaphor of this sort of window of time, and, you know, it comes in different sizes. You can kind of like stretch it. It can adapt. And also there's this folk notion of time as sort of like this movie camera that speeds up and slows down. But with this experiment, we are going to fully break the window and the camera. So apparently, while they were doing that video game plane study, anecdotally, some people noticed that after they got used to the lag and switched back to having no lag, they felt like the plane moved before they moved their mouse.
Wow, okay, that's so cool.
Obviously, someone had to look into that. So this study is truly one of my favorites, hands down, because it's so simple and so devastating with its implications.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's called Motor Sensory Recalibration Leads to an Illusory Reversal of Action and Sensation. It's by Stetson, Tway, Montague, and Eagleman in 2006. And it literally, it's just this. You have a light switch that has a delay. You flip it over and over, and this might have also happened to you in real life. Like there's tons of objects that have this, so like there could be a light switch in your house that has a delay to it. And because of lag adaptation that we learned about, we know that your perception of that lag will slowly disappear over time, so that you think flipping the switch and seeing the light happen at the same time.
Within reason, though.
Within reason, yes.
Because like if you have a pretty delayed light, it's never gonna not seem delay.
You know, one great example of this is lightning and thunder, right? Because that's so big, no one ever sees that gets used to that. But if one day, if you do get used to the lag, if the lag is small enough, and then one day, let's say your roommate fixes the light without telling you, and then you go to flip it, you may feel like the light turns on before you flip the switch. And this isn't a shrinking of time between events. This is a full switch. Like you've rearranged these events. And I want to stress just how weird this is, because in 2005, award-winning sci-fi author Ted Chiang wrote a story called What's Expected of Us, and it's literally about a little device that flashes a light before you press it. Using, in this case, it's, you know, mini time travel. So it's this meditation on like free will. It's beautiful. It's chilling. But also, it's fiction. And then this experiment was published in 2006, the next year. Wow. Now, again, the light doesn't actually turn on before you press it. Like if you watch a video of yourself flipping a light switch, you'll see what actually happened. But it's still very weird, and it's arguably weirder because only you think it happens. So, right, your brain, this is the order of events of what happens. Your brain chooses to flip a switch. It sends the signal down to your hand. You flip the switch. The light turns on. It hits your eyes, gets processed in your brain. And then you think, yeah, no, that happened before, right? Like this is, you know, this isn't true. And so this breaks the model of like stretching time entirely. Time isn't something that we like bend and shrink. Our brains are like cutting and moving time around so that these kinds of errors can happen. So our time perception isn't, you know, a beautiful metaphor of a camera that speeds up or slows down. And there's a ton of work that needs to be done into the implications of this. But I also want to say, I think that it makes the metaphor less beautiful, but I also think it makes knowing things like this makes spooky things less spooky. So if I ever see a light switch turn on before I do, I can think, oh, right. Brains are weird. Time is weird. It happens. Instead of being like, there is a mind-reading, time-traveling ghost in my house that my landlord needs to evict right away.
No, that's perfect. I'm one of those. The time-traveling ghost. I mean, I'm sure he is perfect.
Mind-reading, time-traveling ghost.
Mind-reading, time-traveling ghost. Sorry. I mean, I'm the kind of person who, like, loves to watch a horror film or, like, you know, anything magical with my friends would be like, magic is just unexplained science, and then really piss everyone off.
I think this is true with a lot of cognitive science and a lot of psychology, that knowing that our brains make mistakes shouldn't be something that's scary. It should be something that's reassuring. Right, this is the case with déjà vu also, and, you know, we'll do a whole episode on that another time, hopefully, because I think it's fascinating, but I think knowing that that's just, like, a weird brain quirk is great, so anytime something goes off the fritz, you can just be like, brains are weird, don't have to think about that too much. So, to wrap it up, why do our brains do this in the first place? Why are our brains trying to move things together? Why can't we just perceive things accurately and objectively? And the answer is that would be a horrible mess, right? The world is full of all kinds of delays. Things move, sounds echo, light refracts, our body gets tired, so we process slower. And it's also literally physically impossible to figure out when everything is happening, right? That's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You can't measure when and where everything happens. And so what your brain is trying to do is beautiful. It's trying to take all that information and, through consistent patterns of consistent lags, attempt to imagine a simpler world where things can happen at once, right? In a world without the speed of sound or relativity, where when you clap your hands, I see it and I hear it at the same time. Sometimes it messes up, but most of the time it's super useful and it's incredible. So basically, your brain is recreating simultaneity with probability, which is wacky. So, and in prehistoric times, this is so helpful, like evolutionarily, because when you hear a twig snap behind you, you know, you're not perceiving, okay, that sound happened, you know, 500 milliseconds after my foot hit the ground, and my ear is, you know, 2.5 meters from my foot, and the speed of sound is so it must have happened after the movement of my foot. Your thought is just, I didn't make that sound, I need to run or turn behind me and get out of here. So in present times, these illusions are also really cool because it lets you pretend that things like typing on a keyboard or playing music together or video chatting are simultaneous when they're really not. And that's great. So the original title of my thesis paper was Building Time Through Temporal Illusions of Perception and Action, Sensory and Motor Lag Adaptation and Temporal Order Reversals. But when I...
Oh, yeah, you're right. If you'd said that at the start, it totally would have spoiled everything, because I understand that.
Oh, temporal order reversals, clearly. Oh,
duh!
Sensory motor lag adaptation. But all of this is the reason why when I uploaded my thesis, I shortened the title. When I uploaded it to my website, I shortened the title to Time is a Wish Your Brain Makes. Because that's sort of what's going on. So yeah, time is weird. We need to do more studies on this. Researchers, hit me up. And there we go. Four years after my thesis, still got it.
Amazing, Tom. Well done. That was really, really interesting. I do have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
This is maybe this is a really stupid question. So this idea of, I'm focusing on the idea of the seeing and hearing the clap at the same time.
Yeah.
Do we know if in the perception in the brain, I mean, it must be, right? If sound is much faster than if light is much faster than sound, then our brain must be actively putting the sound putting the image. Like, not letting us perceive the image until later.
That just hurt my brain so much.
So, this is a fantastic question. I actually have the answer for this. So, first of all, one weird thing is that, technically, our brains process visual information slower. That's a weird side fact. So something else to consider. But the other thing is that, in studies, they found that the lag, so like if we do that study with, delaying the audio from a video when someone's talking, it's much more noticeable when the delay happens with the audio coming before the visual. So you can notice it if it comes before roughly like 50 milliseconds, but if it comes after, you only recognize it if it's like past 200 milliseconds. So there is a bias for expecting lag for audio to come after visual. Which is wild. It's really
That's
wild.
That's so cool.
That there are parts of our brain that understand that sound travels.
Expecting lag. Say that sentence again. When audio comes before visual.
Yes, we are better at adapting to lag when the audio comes after the visual.
Okay.
But it's also, it's wacky that our brains indirectly understand that sound travels slower than light. There's another wacky study where... this is really wacky. So they'll show a video of like someone clapping their hand, right? And they'll have the delay, and then they will have the image of the hand clapping be smaller, and they'll increase the delay of the audio, and people will still think it's happening at the same time because it looks like it's farther away. So there's part of our brains that's also possibly accommodating distance into this. It's really wacky. There's and the other great thing I love about these studies is they're so simple to do, right? All you have to do is delay time a little bit and just have these people do these experiments, and the implications for them are wild, right? So a lot of work that needs to be done on this. I think it's really neat.
Amazing.
Tiny bonus fact is that most of these experiments are about touch and hearing and sight, because objectively, those are some of the fastest senses that we have. But I did some side research because I was just curious if people have been testing the temporal speed of our ability to taste and smell. And they actually have. And I found out this little fact. Obviously, the diagrams are amazing because there's like these like things going up people's noses and like pumps and pneumatic tubes and stuff like that.
But
when you test, at least in this one experiment, I learned that when you test two smells and your ability to differentiate them and how long it takes, they call that a temporal odor mixture, or a TOM.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Oh my goodness.
Which I just thought was so silly. I was like, hey, that's my nickname in high school. They called me the temporal odor mixture.
Of course they did. Good old temporal odor mixture coming here.
Hey, are you the temporal odor mixture guy?
Can I set that as your nickname on Instagram?
Oh, no.
Thank you, Tom. That was wonderful.
That was so good. Oh, my goodness.
Thanks, y'all. Always happy to subject people to listen to my thesis research.
So I am doing the question of the week. And it is... do flowers dream of electric sheep? No, bees. Ah, the joke failed. Do flowers dream of electric bees?
And soon it will all fade like bees in the rain.
Okay, the question of the week. Fuck. Can't ruin that joke.
Wait, Do the
do you want to do it again and we'll laugh?
Yeah, yeah, we'll all laugh.
No, it's this. That's cheap now. I'm just going to do the question.
We'll fix it in post. We'll fix it in post.
No. What? I'm not doing it. Okay, ready? Are you ready? The question of this
so
week.
So ready.
The question of the week. The first question is, why are bumblebees electrically charged? And I pass this over to the floor.
Right, okay.
Go, Caroline, you seem to know.
So right. That pollen will stick to them?
Are you serious? Do you know the answer?
I don't know the answer. I'm just, okay. That's an absolute guess.
I'm going with three answers to this question. And this
Ooh.
Is...
Whoa.
And as you just said, Caroline, one of them is...
No
so that
way.
Pollen will stick
Did
there.
I get a question right?
No way! That's awesome!
That's so cool!
That's amazing!
Well done, because I never would have guessed that.
What?! Caroline's taking
thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Oh,
thank
someone's
you.
Throwing roses. That's wild. Oh my god. Oh, a standing ovation. The whole concert hall.
So
we're recording this.
Keep going.
For reference, we're recording this at the Royal Albert Hall live. Everyone, please stay quiet. Thank you for silently applauding, Caroline, and please keep throwing roses. That's bonkers.
That's
okay.
So
also, I want to clarify, maybe be an audience surrogate. My first question should have been for me, did you know that bumblebees are electrically charged? To which the answer was no, let alone
oh,
why.
Oh, did you I know? Did you? They are electrically
yeah,
charged.
I,
Caroline, did you know? Because you really came up with that immediately. Or are you just that good?
I honestly did not know. But like my immediate brain was like static electricity.
Brilliant.
Stuff
Excellent.
Sticks to
that's
you. A, yeah.
That's, I, come on. That's
I can
slam
be smart
dunk.
Sometimes, guys.
Okay, let me get the next two, please.
Okay,
I'll keep my mouth shut now. I've done my job.
Right, loser gets first try on the other two.
Let me put a bit of context on this. So we've known as a society that bumblebees are electrically charged since the 1960s.
What?
Well, I guess it's all bees, but I'm only talking in the context of bumblebees, or honeybees, I guess.
This might be a stupid question. Am I electrically charged?
I don't know, and I don't think so, and let me tell you why. Because when they're flying, the friction of the air and the friction of their body parts on one another causes them to become very weakly.
That's amazing!
Wow.
Okay, so obviously, reason number two, you get a bunch of bees lined up in series or in parallel. You can create a circuit, you can form logic gates. That's why hives are so smart, because you can form mini bumblebee computers and then,
yeah.
You know, play like Minecraft or like Doom on a calculator. You can play it on bees.
Actually, so, yeah, bumblebees
Ella, don't,
can actually
Ella, don't,
predict.
Don't even give me
bumblebees can actually predict.
You give me an inch, I will take a mile. Do not...
pi to the 1,000th decimal.
Wait, come on.
That's a throwback to an episode we didn't publish.
But it's very funny.
I promise, that's hilarious. Okay, let me give you a bit more. So bumblebees carry around 120 picocoulombs. I think that's how you say it, a coulomb. Which is a measure of electrical charge.
Mm-hmm.
They carry around 120 picocoulombs of electrical charge. So for reference,
wow.
This the amount of electrical charge carried by a lightning bolt is estimated at 10 coulombs, and this is around 1 billion times more than a bumblebee carries.
Oh,
how, okay.
Very very tiny.
How many bumblebees is that? Is in a bolt of lightning bolt?
Oh, we have to
it's
answer
about
that
10,
question.
It would be about a billion. It would be just a, it would be like 100 million to a billion
oh,
bumblebees.
That's so cute.
That's so wonderful. Oh my
that's
god.
The best. Imagine them all lined up
nice?
And like doing the shape of it in the sky.
So, yeah, it's very sweet. So we've known
okay,
for a very long
ask,
time.
Could I ask?
That...
So I believe bumblebees have some type of vision that's you know beyond what humans can perceive. I believe and. Is this,
they can see
so that,
ultraviolet.
Right, thank you.
And they use this to, like, find flowers. Right. But this is not related.
It doesn't help them see each other.
They have an insane amount of, like, extra senses to help them find pollen. And seeing an ultraviolet is one of them. And maybe one day I'll do a deep dive into all of the different things bees can do.
Yes.
Because they are truly amazing. Yes. But this is just about their little static bodies.
Anything I can do, bees can do better. That's your tagline for you to ruin next time, Ella, to stumble.
Please. Okay. Well, it's true, though. pollen, so the first thing, as Caroline says, when a positively charged bee lands on a flower, the negatively charged pollen will naturally stick to it.
Amazing.
That's so cool.
But this is happening naturally. Bees, they didn't evolve, as far as I'm aware, to have electrical charge. It just happens because they're small and they bump into things in the air, right? Oh. But they actually do use their electrical charge. So can you think, how might bees use their electrical charge?
Can they static zap people?
How cute. No.
Does it help them fly at all?
Oh, that's a nice idea. No, I don't think so. Not that I saw. They're hovering above the ground.
Because, you know, according to all known laws of aviation.
But, yeah.
Oh, does it keep them waterproof?
That's also a very good idea. And maybe it does. And all of these things are not, like, they're not the things that people study.
Not, like, the reasons?
It's not the reason. So, I mean, I think you've had a few good guesses. And we started off really well with the pollen stuff, so I can't really hold it against you.
And also Tom's idea of a bee computer was really good too.
That was so good. It does it help them communicate amazing. In some way.
Kind of, but not with each other.
Whoa.
With the flower?
With computers.
Yeah.
No!
This is technically a two-way communication system, but we didn't know that. So I'll start with the first way, okay? So bees can sense flowers using this electrical charge, okay? A study from the University of Bristol back in 2013, the researchers built a small arena full of fake flowers. I imagine it like some kind of like dome stadium kind of thing with fake flowers. Right. And they
very like Mad Max.
Like that.
There's
exactly. So each flower was like just a stalk with a metal dish at the top, and then they put either sugar in one of the fake flowers, or they put in what was it, quinine, which is a substance that is bitter and disgusting to bees. So and then they just released the bees into the arena, and what they found is they moved around completely randomly, landing on whatever of the fake flowers, and they had no real sense of where they were going. Mm. But when they added a small electrical charge to the metal part of the flower, the bees learned what was in the dishes. So they would add it to they added it just to the sugar water. And immediately the bees knew where the sugar water was.
Oh my god, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Isn't it amazing? Bees are so cool.
Bees are awesome. Oh my god.
Not only that, is once the bee left the flower, the electrical field around the flower would stay charged for up to 100 seconds, which was long enough that the next bee could come along and it would know before even touching the flower.
Wow.
That if something was there that was good for it or not.
Whoa.
Okay,
I have a question.
Yeah.
How did we learn that bees had a charge?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I didn't look this up, and I should have. I feel like
by
accident.
It's
probably something really dumb. Because we've known for so long, it can't have been through any, like, sophisticated technological means.
Yeah.
It was probably like someone had a bee and it made the hairs on their arms stand up or something.
Yeah, yeah.
With static electricity. This is
I'm gonna find
next
this
week
out.
I will find out and we can do like a corrections corner.
Nice.
That's adorable. Okay, yeah.
That's clickbait. Tune in next time.
Yeah. Tune in next time if you want to find out how we know that bees are electric.
Yay!
So a few years later, this same group actually found out that the reason the bees can feel the electrical charge of the flowers is because the electrical field of the flowers bends the small fuzzy hairs that covers their bodies.
Wow! So it's literally like a spidey sense. Like, literally, yeah. Like the hairs tingle on
that's
their...
so cool!
Oh, that's so cool!
And they could do it from as far as 55 centimeters away.
Oh my god!
Holy
shit! That's insane! For a bee, yeah! Whoa.
Wow.
That's so cool.
Ah!
Isn't that amazing? I love it.
That's amazing.
I like bees so much more now. I liked them a lot already. And now it's just like, oh my god.
Every time I learn something new about bees, I just find them unbearable.
How does this keep happening to bees?
Why is it always bees?
How?
Do any
Why
other...
can't I... have electrical charge.
Yeah, why can't I be that cool? Are we aware of any other animals that have an electrical charge?
Yeah.
Eels.
Fair. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll take the L on that. That's fair.
You're correct, yes.
I understand the biology of this, but not the physics part. So I feel like the reason they're electrically charged is because they are so small. So if there is another animal electrically charged in the same way, it's going to be something like an insect, right?
That's the other wild thing about this. It's exactly that. It's like it's physics and biology at the same time. That's
right.
Oh, that's
amazing. So the fact that because they were like this. The natural physics of the bee, they probably adapted to or evolved to become communicative with flowers.
It's all the same thing, you know? Like, electricity isn't magic. It's like a part of a thing that happens in all the...
Electricity isn't magic? What?
What? Wait, what?
And I have one final question to round this out, and this is the reason I'm doing this question overall, because I found out about this today. Do the flowers know that the bees are there? And what do you think that means for them?
I want to say yes.
Do they open up more? Are they like, can they, is this like those IR garage openers where it's like they realize that like a bee's coming and then they can, is that what happens?
You're definitely on the right track there. I would say that that's like definitely like half a point.
Thanks.
Yeah, but yes, Caroline, you're right. Yes, I did kind of reveal this already. The flowers do know. They do know. And what they know, well, okay, so this is the same group from the University of Bristol. They've just do some really cool work at this.
They just really like bees. Yeah.
They published a paper on the 14th of September 2021, and I saw it in the newspaper this morning in a couple of different newspapers. For those who don't know, why would any of you know, because I've only told Tom and Caroline, I'm interning at a science press office, and I have to read the newspapers every single morning, and that's why I'm doing this question, because I found this really fun study and it kind of got me snowballing back on the electricity of bees. But basically, when bees are near flowers, the electrical charge on the bees causes the flowers to emit more scent. Like, the chemical attractants that flowers produce to attract pollinators, it causes them to emit more.
Wow. I would love to know what the mechanism is behind that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
As far as the actual biological mechanism, I don't think that's understood yet, because this is very new research. They only know now that it does happen. What they did is they didn't use actual bees for this, because I think it would have been too difficult, because they used real flowers. Petunias, specifically. Oh. What they did, they got nylon balls the size of a bee. And then they charged them with electricity, the same amount. And they used those to substitute bees.
Oh.
Substitute.
And then when... And then they just touched the nylon balls of the petals of the petunias. And they found that the petunias emitted twice as much of their attractive chemicals as they normally would.
Wow. That's so cool.
I know, right? And the study says, this is a quote, that this might better ensure that their attractive chemical messages are released when a potential recipient is present. So they're like, I know you guys are here. Come on over.
That is so cool. Oh my goodness.
I love to imagine, like, you know, on the time off for these researchers, they just move, they take these fuzzballs into the fake flower dome, and they just have some pretend time with the fake bees and the fake flowers.
The fake bees and the fake flowers.
I also love the idea of pitching the flower dome.
I know, right? Oh my goodness. I want that job. Making some fake bees. That sounds great.
You can have that job. You're well on your way. I'm going to doing there. That
yeah,
kind of
yeah.
Biology.
This is
going to
be me someday.
I can be a fake bee. Just cover me in fuzz.
I'll be a fake bee. Sounds like a much better life. Fake bee.
Hey, what's your Halloween costume? I don't really get it. Oh, I'm a fake bee.
I'm a fake bee.
My friend's
like a clown.
Dressed as the flower dome.
Fake
Welcome
bee and
to the
dome.
Flower dome.
Got a friend of here dressed as a petunia. We're going for it this year.
So how does the flower dome work? Well, a bunch of bees enter, and only one can leave.
Oh no! I can't abide by that. I'm afraid I'm too the bees, the fake bees, and the real bees. They're too good.
I do not want a bee Hunger Games today. Not today.
That's amazing.
Well, there you go, guys. That is why bees are electrically charged.
Thank you so much for that. That was so good. Do we want to just rebrand amazing. The podcast just to be about bees?
Apparently there's infinite content.
There's so much about bees that we just... Yeah, we could do it.
When I put the bee on the cover, I was just like, is this just because I like bees? It turns out science loves bees.
Bees.
Bees, insects like ants and bees,
yeah,
are infinitely fascinating.
Ants,
you know,
yeah, absolutely. They're so cool, and there's so much we don't know about them. I thought we knew everything there was to know about bees. Apparently, not.
I know, that's the thing. It's like I didn't expect to learn they had a electric spidey sense.
Nope.
It clings to.
Gosh. There's no end point to science, is there? We're just gonna keep going and going.
So, Carolyn, do you want to tell us how you think the moon's fake and is also flat? Flat moon theory? Is that your...
Flat moon!
Okay, so I have actually written a disclaimer for my section, because I want to make a few things very clear. So, I love conspiracy theories. I think they're fun. They make my brain work in a way that it doesn't often work. I have never come across a conspiracy theory that I actually believe in, ever. Full stop. None. Some conspiracy theories are rooted in things like racism and bigotry. This one is rooted in classism. I will highlight that at various points. My other note is, you should not believe a conspiracy theory just because someone you like has shared it. A 2014 study found that 50% of all Americans believe in a conspiracy theory that has been disproved.
It's a lie.
It's a lot of people. So please look at the bedrock of any conspiracy theories that you believe in. If the evidence for it is shaky from the get-go, if it's like based in bigotry of some sort, or if you just believe it because a celebrity, politician, or friend has shared it with you, you maybe need to reconsider why you believe that conspiracy theory. They're fun. Don't take them too seriously, or they can be harmful. On that note, everybody, let's talk about how William Shakespeare did not write William Shakespeare's work.
Yeah, I love this one! This one's good!
I actually don't know this. This is probably one of the only conspiracies I've never heard of.
I love this
Someone
one
wasn't
so
a theatre
much.
Kid.
And it shows.
I was not. You know what? That's probably the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
It's like those comments where it's like, theater kid, parentheses, derogatory.
Oh, no. That's us. That's us.
Ding.
Okay. So, some background on who William Shakespeare is for the 1% of the audience who maybe doesn't know.
I've heard of him before.
I don't think I've heard of
him
before.
I'm sorry, no, you're not. No, 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 no. You're not doing background on who William Shakespeare is.
Some of it is somewhat important. So,
here's some background on Jesus Christ for those who don't know.
He has been listed as one of, like, the most influential people, only being beaten by Jesus Christ. His stuff is, like, the most read stuff apart from the Bible. Yeah. Like, he is that influential. If anybody doesn't know who he is, I'd be shocked.
He's the biggest influencer in today's
just
influencer
the
economy.
The biggest influencer. anyway, so some key information that might become relevant later on. He was born in 1564, died in 1616. He was the son of a glove maker. And he was born in Stratford-upon-Avon. During his lifetime, he wasn't, like, revered. He was seen as good, but other people were better. It wasn't until the late 1700s and early to mid-1800s where interest in his work was sort of reignited. Critics and writers...
When again? How many years was that?
Like, a solid 100 years later, at least.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
I think that's going to happen with my TikToks also.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm hoping.
We're going to all be revered scientists in 100 years' time.
I can't, you know, I know that the audience can't see the displeasure on my face right now making at Tom's comments, but just know it's
there. It's there. So, at the point where the interest in his work was reignited, he was basically, like, so popular that he was seen as a genius. And he's still seen as a genius to this day. This is also where the conspiracy theory started.
Sorry, the conspiracy theory started immediately upon him becoming famous.
Pretty much. Honestly, it's ridiculous how quickly people started to, like, pick apart his life when he became famous again. It's a lot.
Can I just say, I am already seeing some parallels with Jesus here, because he didn't become famous until after, like,
that,
I think it was like 50 years
real
after
conspiracy
he died
theory.
Or something, so.
Jesus is Shakespeare.
You know, I've never seen them in the same place at the same time. Makes you think.
They both have long hair. That's enough for some theorists. So yeah, that's where the conspiracy theory is kind of, like, originating. People basically were thinking, like, how could somebody who was born from a glove maker in Stratford-upon-Avon be a literary genius? Like, that just...
Okay, I see the classist elements already.
Yes, it really shines through. So there are a few other pieces of evidence, not just, like, he was stupid. So, there's no surviving evidence that he ever went to school. And because of the segregation of the classes at that time, it would have been really, really hard for an uneducated man to learn about things like court politics, the lifestyle of aristocrats, foreign countries, stuff like that. So one of the big questions is, how did he know about things like the inner workings of the court if he didn't have any sort of education to at least build up from?
Can I give a prediction?
Go for it.
He watched a lot of plays.
It's a very, very good prediction. And it's pretty close to correct. there are a few other bits which are less solid grounds of evidence, but we'll talk about them anyway. There are not a lot of signatures that survive from Shakespeare. There's only 6 signatures left that have been confirmed
to be
Shakespeare's.
Are they actually physically in the world?
Yes. They,
where are
these
they?
Exist.
Can I have one?
Ooh, I don't know where they are. I think a lot of them are in, like, museums across the UK. So you can go and see them. I just can't gift you one. I'm so sorry, Ella.
Well,
rude,
no,
I know.
Point of view.
If you look at them, they aren't exactly readable. So the theory is that he might have actually been illiterate because his handwriting was so bad.
Okay.
And, you know, none of us have ever met a doctor with bad handwriting or anything. No. No, of course not. How could you suggest such a thing? The other thing is that there are at least 20 different ways that Shakespeare spelled his own name. which adds to the idea that maybe he was illiterate. He couldn't spell his own name correctly. Spellings like...
Maybe he was just dyslexic.
Yeah, there are so many better conclusions to come to, other than he did not write the works.
I read in the Anthropocene Reviewed that we don't... Like, we're able to predict the exact location of Halley's Comet, like to the second, but we don't know how Edmund Halley's name is pronounced or spelled.
Yeah.
So, like, some of those things just get wonked up. Like,
that's exactly
we didn't have
it. And I'll talk
any
about
records of things.
I will debunk everything that I've said now a little bit later on.
Excellent.
But again, you are exactly on the right lines of just like people got lazy and spelt their names differently sometimes, and that's fine. But yeah, so one of the reasons why people don't believe it was Shakespeare is because he spelled his name wrong.
Caroline is doing finger quotes.
Solid, yes, yeah, solid bunny ears happening right now. One other thing which is important to mention is that in his last will and testimony, so when he died, he did not mention any books. He did not mention any papers. He didn't even mention any of the 18 unpublished plays that he had written. So the theory is kind of like, clearly he didn't care. He didn't have these belongings, so he wouldn't have written about them in his will, in theory.
I feel like that's some retroactive. Because also, again, no one cared about him.
Well, yeah.
So it's not like
exactly.
He knew. Yeah.
It's unclear who the first person was who said that Shakespeare wasn't Shakespeare. But it's called the anti-Stratfordian theory.
Great.
And it was first popularized by two people. This was in 1857 by Delia Bacon and William H. Smith. Both of them separately published books arguing that the works of Shakespeare were most likely written by a man named Francis Bacon, who is in no relation to Delia Bacon. Should clarify that now. Do either of you know who Francis Bacon was?
I am aware of this theory.
This theory
as
specifically.
Well.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about three people that we think it might have been. Francis Bacon is one of the most popular theories. The other two are absolutely batshit crazy. I love them so much.
Chris Hemsworth.
So I'm just going to read some Wikipedia stuff about Sir Francis Bacon for anybody who doesn't know who he is, because he's not like a super, super well-known name. He was born in 1561, died in 1626. So the timeline matches up for, you know, when William Shakespeare died. Evidence number one. He was an English philosopher, statesman, he served as Attorney General and the Lord Chancellor of England. He's also thought of as somebody who helped develop the scientific method and remained influential throughout the scientific revolution. So, like, very high up person in the English courts. He was pally with Queen Elizabeth I, and after she died, King James I as well. So he was very, very influential at the time. The theory says that because the stigma of being a playwright was so bad, if he had tried to be a playwright, it would have damaged his reputation in court. Therefore, he wrote under a pseudonym, and that pseudonym was William Shakespeare. It gets crazier from here. Many people believe that Bacon left ciphers in all of William Shakespeare's work.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Please.
Ciphers are, like, really conspiracy bait to the next level.
Oh, yeah. This is my favourite thing. So, a man named Orville Ward Owen made a cipher wheel. This is to help him crack the ciphers quicker. He fed the entire works of Shakespeare into this cipher wheel. And of course...
And when it came out at the other end, it said,
I am Lord Voldemort.
Oh! I can't believe we did that at the same time.
Oh!
That was incredible. Oh, my God.
Oh, that sucks. And also, that rules. That's so good.
Oh man, are we that obvious?
Darn millennials. Oh, incredible. Actually, it said some
apologies,
even
Caroline,
more batshit crazy stuff. No, it gets.
You knew. You had to have known.
I knew something was coming.
In your script, you say it, and then you have in parentheses pause for the same joke from Ella and Tom.
That was absolutely incredible from both of you. Oh my god. So yeah, fed all of Shakespeare's work into the cipher wheel. If you throw enough shit at a wall, something will stick, you know?
Right.
So obviously the cipher then turns around and says, oh yeah, Sir Francis Bacon totally wrote Shakespeare. Didn't just say that though. It said that Sir Francis Bacon hid boxes containing documents proving that he wrote the works of Shakespeare. People went looking for these boxes, and obviously shit was ever found.
One of them's buried under the Declaration of Independence. We need to.
I really do like this. Like, I can see.
You can see the appeal of it.
Yeah, unlike a lot of other conspiracy theories, which are always end up coming back to some kind of like weird racist Jewish conspiracy. Yeah. At least, at the very least, this is like a treasure hunt.
Yeah.
Other than the classist stuff,
other than that part,
it's
a relatively harmless one.
Yeah,
this the term for that, for people finding patterns from nothing, is apophenia. And I think, yeah, knowing that, like, sort of what we were talking about before, the cogsci stuff. It's like knowing that, and then whenever I see myself doing that, I'm like, oh, okay, hold on. It's very easy to want to find patterns and things like that.
Yeah.
Is there any actual like cipher treasure hunt from history? Has there been any?
I honestly don't think there has. I feel like we'd all know about that if there was something.
Yeah, we would. People just figure this stuff out too quickly, right?
People would have made films about this. You know, it would be huge. There'd be TV series about it.
Yeah.
Continuing on, not only did the cipher talk about these boxes which don't exist, the cipher suggested that Sir Francis Bacon was actually the illegitimate son of the Queen and was the rightful heir to the throne. And people,
amazing,
for a good period of time, full on believed this stuff. So, William and...
Do people still believe it now?
Less so for the reason that I'm about to say.
Can I be honest? Sort of theater dork, I have heard some of these, and I have, you know, in like early internet era when like you just like see a well-produced video, and again, because I haven't questioned it in my life a ton, I wasn't sure as to the bunkness or not of these, because I was just like, maybe. So
I would like to say now, actually, like, there are many, many hours of lectures that you can watch online talking about how Shakespeare did not write Shakespeare. People do fully believe that point, at least the actual author is debated, but people will do like 3-hour long lectures presenting the evidence for it. It's insane. But there are also some very accessible videos on why it's all bullshit. So we'd totally recommend people go watch those if you are believing this theory. Because it is ridiculous. So, William and Elizabeth Friedman, who you might both know, were American cryptologists. They helped decipher codes during World War I and World War II. They saw these ciphers, they looked over them, they confirmed they're not real. They're just not real.
Yeah, of course.
So, at that point, the Baconian theory basically dies down a reasonable amount. Mm-hmm. Some actual proper professionals have said, no, it's not true. So people have stepped back from this theory. So,
good.
The current favourite... Yeah, it's this is really bad. Just putting that out there. This is ridiculous.
Is it Paul Rudd? I feel like he's ageless. he could pull off.
He could have totally time traveled and done this for sure. So the current favorite theory is a person called Edward de Vere, who was the 17th Earl of Oxford at the time. This is the evidence for it. The Earl traveled to Italy, and some of Shakespeare's work is set in Italy.
Yeah. Case closed. Dun, dun,
dun. Case closed.
Is now, that it?
It's not just that. He had a personal Bible, which he underlined some passages in. And those passages also appear in Shakespeare's work. That's about it. That's about all they got. Yeah. It can also be debunked further. Do we remember what year Shakespeare died in?
No, wait. Before you... I've been to Italy.
Bella, hold on.
Do you have something you need to tell us?
Maybe.
Do
maybe
you
I'll
know
reveal it on another
inner
episode.
The workings of the court.
That's why she knew all these hints is because.
Holy shit! Oh my god. Conspiracy theory unlocked. So, Shakespeare died in 1616. Edward de Vere died 4 years before that. Oh, no, wait, that's a lie. He actually died 12 years before that. He died in 1604, which some of the plays hadn't even been written yet.
Well,
oh, come on.
Carolyn, clearly you've got a Paul McCartney / Avril Lavigne fake duo replacement death thing going on here. Is this your first conspiracy theory?
You've just hit the nail on the head for who the next person is.
No, are you kidding? No.
It's...
no.
It's
Sir Paul McCartney.
Okay, so we all know Edward de Vere is bullshit, right? The next one, this is my absolute fucking favorite one. Who knows who Christopher Marlowe is?
Oh, it sounds familiar.
It's another very famous English playwright from the same sort of time. Yeah, so he's a poet, playwright, and translator. He was alive between 1564 and 1593. Already can see people poking holes in this theory. It's really good. Bear with me with this one. People believe that he greatly influenced William Shakespeare's work. And actually, William Shakespeare and Marlowe were baptized in the same year, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool little bit of
coincidence.
I think not.
Yes, literally the definition of a coincidence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Marlowe had a degree from Cambridge in 1584. He's a very intelligent man. Potentially could have learnt about the inner workings of the court, had access to that information, so maybe knew enough to talk about what Shakespeare talked about. He's also allegedly a spy for the government. So this is where the ridiculous comes in. So he died 1593, which is obviously much before Shakespeare died. His death is still deemed as mysterious.
Every death was mysterious back then. Well, we didn't know anything.
He was allegedly... there was a warrant out for his arrest on the 18th of May, and he then died on the 30th. And we don't really know what happened. There are actual conspiracy theories around his death. Anything from being assassinated by the Queen, accidentally being killed by a debt collector, and, my personal favourite, faking his own death so that he could go on to be William Shakespeare.
There it is.
I got
like
so
a
wrapped
beautiful
up.
Marriage between two conspiracy theories meet each other at a bar and
merging
they're like,
together.
Oh, hey, what's up?
Oh, hey there.
It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup. You got your Marlowe conspiracy and my Shakespeare conspiracy. Two great conspiracies that conspiracy together.
It's so ridiculous. I love it so much. So yeah, the theory is that he was about to be like revealed to be a spy and therefore faked his own death but wanted to continue writing, so wrote under the pseudonym William Shakespeare. As you can see, people would rather believe that a man faked his own death and wrote as Shakespeare rather than believing some poor guy from Stratford-upon-Avon wrote the works of Shakespeare.
Who had, like, a messy signature. God forbid.
Yeah, who had a messy signature. Oh, heaven forbid, they have bad handwriting. Oh, no. It's obviously just rooted in classism at that point. Really want to make that clear. People believe this for classist reasons. I also want to go on and debunk the things that I said earlier about how Shakespeare couldn't have possibly written Shakespeare. So the first one is... we can't prove that Shakespeare went to school, but no records were kept for anybody who went to the school that he would have gone to. He went to school in the 1500s.
Right, it's like
of
saying
course records don't exist.
It's like saying there's no videos of Shakespeare, right?
Literally! those records just aren't there for anyone. You can't use that as evidence. Not only this, but people are like, oh, Shakespeare's a genius. Oh my goodness. He got shit wrong all the goddamn fucking time. A few examples I have are in Julius Caesar, Shakespeare refers to clocks, which hadn't been made yet. They weren't going to exist for another 1,400 years.
Oh, wow.
That's like putting an iPhone in a Shakespeare play. Literally. That's so funny.
Yeah. And Shakespeare was just like, oh, yeah, this is fine.
No, it's not. It's worse than that. Because
that was so bad.
That was 400 years ago. That's like putting an iPhone, you know, in Jesus's hand.
That's...
He also got the location of pretty famous Greek cities wrong. In Coriolanus, he said that the Greek city, I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, I'm so sorry, Delphi. He refers to that as an island. Problem is, it's not a goddamn fucking island. It's found in a valley in southwestern spur of Mount Parnassus.
Sounds like someone who's never been to Italy.
Sounds like somebody who's never travelled the goddamn world. It's also thought that he had access to some pretty famous plays which also had incorrect pieces of information in them and just copied the incorrect information from other people's plays into his plays. It's what people did all the time. He potentially copied the work of Marlowe. The very famous line from Romeo and Juliet, where they're on the balcony, basically copied and pasted from Marlowe's work.
Oh, so, God.
You know, it wasn't unusual at the time. It is not grounds for this conspiracy theory at all.
It's much more likely that someone copied someone else's work. Like, that's Taylor's oldest time.
That's just what people did. He copied whole paragraphs of work from other people. Like, you can see this over and over again in Shakespeare's work. I'd also like to mention the bad signatures are just really, really nail home that doctors do exist. And that they do have a bit of a track record for having bad handwriting. I don't turn around to my GP and tell them that they're faking it. Like, come on.
I think you're illiterate, actually. You should not be working as a doctor. Right?
That's the other conspiracy. No doctors can read.
Oh, there was another thing as well. Oh, yeah. The whole thing that Shakespeare couldn't spell his name right. Famous people who were signing a lot of stuff at the time would shorten their own name down as well because they're lazy. So he did that as well. So again, it's stuff that's very easily like debunked. Another thing that I do want to talk about is something called stylometry. Have either of you two heard of that before? It's basically analyzing a person's writing style to see things like common traits in their writing, how many times they use certain words, punctuation, sentence structure, things like that. You can then compare other people's style to other people in a very accurate way.
Yeah,
people
there's like a thing on the internet you can like put your own writing in and it will compare it against famous authors and say who you most write like.
Well, alternatively, Carolyn, you could put all the works into a magical cipher and make it say that you're that there's
and
hidden
boxes.
And
make it say that Bacon is actually the heir to England. Yeah, obviously. Heir to England, heir to the throne.
The heir to England.
They did this with all of Shakespeare's work. They created like a characteristic thing for Shakespeare's work, compared it to many other people who were alive at the time, and it had zero crossover with any other authors at the time. So like, there is actual scientific evidence that the only person who wrote Shakespeare was Shakespeare. In theory, Shakespeare and Christopher Marlowe might have collaborated at some point, but that's about it. But this conspiracy theory is so popular that people like Sigmund Freud believed it. Charlie Chaplin believed this.
Wow.
Helen Keller believed this.
Wow.
For no reason, basically. All of these really, really famous people believe this conspiracy theory, which can be debunked in 20 minutes by a person with a podcast.
That's insane. I can believe that Freud did this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Freud, sure. But everybody else? No. It's mad.
Wow.
Huh. So yeah, that's my favorite conspiracy theory. It takes a lot of twists
and
turns. That's
great. There are. I've genuinely never heard so much of that before.
There's also a lot of other people that, like, are in the running for being the writer of Shakespeare. There's not enough that I could talk about here, but, like, Queen Elizabeth I is theorized. Yeah, no, it's really dumb. And, like, other women and other people in power at the time, everybody's like, how could it possibly be this schoolboy from Stratford-upon-Avon who was the son of a glove maker?
It's almost like a fun little game to try to come up with these tenuous connections and circumstantial evidence to do that.
But this is what I mean by, like, it makes my brain work in a very different way than how it usually does, which is really fun, but you just can't take it too seriously because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, wild.
Well,
there you go, everyone.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right, as we come to a close, does anyone have any plugs or shoutouts they want to do?
Yes, please follow all of us on TikTok. If you don't already, we each make our own specific brand of science content. My username is big_science_energy. Big science energy. I've got it. I am it. You want it. Follow me.
That's a great tagline. I've never heard that.
That's so good.
I'm Tom Lumperson. You want it. You have it. You got it.
Or as my auto captions corrects Tom Lumperson to every single time.
What was it again?
Tom Layperson.
Incredible. I am caroline.roper.art everywhere. I'm not going to say the dodgy taglines. Just not going to do it. No.
Too cool for that.
No. I'm way too cool.
You want frogs? They got frogs.
Oh, actually, I should also plug the Discord server.
Oh, yes, we have a new Discord server. It's so exciting. You can find a link to it on our website, letslearneverythingpod.com. You can go to the Discord to talk about episodes, talk about the show, chat about science, ask us questions, and just hang out with other people who want to learn everything. It's nice. It's fun.
And if you can, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. It really helps the podcast.
Also, a very special thank you to Tom, that is Tom Lum, for editing this podcast. I don't know where we'd be without him. We love and appreciate you, Tom. Thank you
very much. Truly a star among mortals.
And since you all said that, you have to allow me to say another great shout out to Carly Rae Jepsen. Everyone go stream Call Me Maybe, celebrating 10 years of a wonderful bop that we don't deserve such greatness.
All of the Carly Rae Jepsen stuff has to stay in the podcast. I'm saying it now.
No, we're cutting that whole last bit out.
Do we want to just do it again?
Yeah, Ella, are you going to edit? You're going to edit that out?
I'm so furious.
Congrats, Carly. I know you listen to our podcast.
Congrats.
Yeah, she listens to the first episode as well.
Mm-hmm. She scrolled back. She went through.
I sent her the test episodes, didn't you guys?
Guys, I know this is going to go off the rails because Tom can talk about Carly Rae Jepsen for years. So
literally forever.
So, to recap, today we learned about how weird time is. We've learned about all the great reasons why bees are electric. And we learned about a wonderful little conspiracy theory and why Shakespeare is very definitely Shakespeare. And that's the end of that. And you all can join us next time where we'll learn about everything. And I thought we would all say that at the same time. Do we want to try that? We'll learn about
everything.
Good. Wonderful. Great.
Let's Learn Everything is independently produced and hosted by Ella Hubber, Tom Lum, and Caroline Roper. Editing and music by the wonderful and talented Tom Lum.
That's great! I love that!
It's so cute. That's fantastic.
Podcast networks, buy us! We will sell out!
Yeah, this podcast does not currently have a network. But we are willing to sell.
Our asking price, 10 million bees.
Bees. 10 billion.
One lightning bolt of bees.